once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And I was having trouble hearing myself, so that makes it interesting. Welcome to the Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And on this, the day before Christmas. You're right. It's the day before. My mind is really having a lot of trouble with Christmas happening on a Monday.
You just have to say the day before you say the day before, and then you have the day before Christmas.
Do I have to say the day before, the day before
Christmas? It is the day before the eve of the day before the eve of Christmas.
No.
Well, the whole day we call it Christmas Eve, but it is not an eve all day long. Christmas Eve morning doesn't make any – that's like an oxymoron. That's like saying the day night.
Well, we say the full day, and it means the night too.
So, yeah, that's true. And we were – yesterday and today is the solstice. This is the shortest day, longest night combination. So yesterday, last night – but when you say when the solstice is, people say today's date, the 22nd or the 23rd.
Wouldn't it really be the darkest?
The darkest?
Darkest instead what of the solstice. What is the darkest? Sol is sun, right? And so since January 20th, 21st, something like that.
They just give the same name.
Is the solstice because the sun dominates.
So no, this should be
the darkest.
No, this is actually a really good one because on the other side of the planet, on the southern hemisphere, it is the longest day.
Yeah, but it's a solstice for them. It's the darkest for us.
That's too confusing. I like just one word for it. The solstice. We can have it twice.
One word for two opposite things.
Yeah. So the other time of the year in June, when we do the same thing again, where it's the longest day, we also call that the solstice because on the other side of the planet, it's the shortest day.
The day is 24 hours.
We have these very strange little ceremonies that we figure out.
But, you know, the whole issue is the shortest day of the year is in March.
I think it's hilarious that
it's only 23 hours
that we celebrate these things, nights, days, how long a year is and so on, by how often we pass into our own shadow. If a child were running along and saying, every time I step in my own shadow, that's when I'm going to count to one or the next number. But we do that universally here as a normal thing. We're stepping into Earth's shadow repeatedly.
Yeah, but I'm not the Earth.
That's debatable.
Oh, well, I'm made of Earth.
You are made of Earth. You're on the planet. From a distance, someone would point at the planet and say that is Earth.
It's kind of like fleas on a dog. You point at the dog and say that's a dog, but it's you're including the fleas.
Well, I mean, is a mountain Earth? Is your hand you? So you see what I mean? And once you have...
I see what you said.
I hope you see what I said.
I don't. I can hear it. Anyway.
Imagine you see what I said.
This is the Personal Wealth Coach, which happens to be the name of a radio program in which we mutter inanities for 2 hours and pretend like we know what we're talking about.
That was as understandable as the tax code.
Yes.
So what we just talked about makes as much sense as the tax code.
We were discussing the tax code, I think.
Yes.
And the Personal Wealth Coach is also the name of a registered investment advisory firm headquartered in Salado, Texas. And it's not coincidence because the two principals of that firm are the two yammering mouths on this program.
And if you come to our office, you will come to the principal's office.
That's right.
Yes.
Well, not necessarily, because some people come in and they see somebody else in the office and they don't see us, which means they don't have to go to the principal's office.
Only if you're in trouble.
Right. And anything we say on this radio program should not be taken too terribly seriously. It's educational. We get it from sources we generally believe to be correct, but we make no warranty as its accuracy, correctness, or completeness.
And as we have already said, just because it's correct doesn't mean it's right.
I mean,
the solstice or the darkest, which one of those is the correct one?
I think.
And which one is the right one? And I think correctness is the name it's called, but is it a right name? Well, that's a good question.
I think Ben Johnson is responsible.
Somebody's responsible.
And
could be Franklin.
What we provide on this radio program is not investment advice, even though we are a registered investment advisory firm. Or at least we're part of a registered investment advisory firm.
Let's throw in something that isn't so disclosure-esque. The reason why we're doing this is we're really trying to give some education to the public. Nobody teaches us this stuff.
So both of you that are listening.
Yes, all one of you.
Anyway.
You'll get really edumacated.
We had a week. This week at the end of 2017, as we close in ever more tightly on the shortest daylight period of the year, which is technically today. And the stock markets indicated that there was a week that went by. The S&P 500 was up 0.28% for the
0.28%. Even though we had a massive tax cut.
Well, you know, one of the things that we really wanted to know, or at least that there was a big intellectual question we'll never know the answer to, and that is, what happens if the tax bill doesn't pass? What will
people
happen
asked
to the
us a lot, and there's an easy answer to that. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows.
Well,
because it didn't happen.
We now know what happened on the day the tax bill passed and was signed.
Yes.
The market dropped.
Very, very, very tiny amount, but yes.
So now, you know, one could, you know, extrapolate from that the fact that had the tax bill not passed, the market would have risen just a little bit.
No.
No, you don't
think
so?
You can't extrapolate for that, because it's kind of like saying if you had gotten up and put on a different pair of shoes, you wouldn't have gotten the raise today.
Well, I got a raise today?
Well, if you got a raise. Maybe you didn't get a raise because you put on the wrong pair of shoes.
That's probably the issue there. Anyway, well, I did get a raise for next year.
This is a good subject. I need to hold on to it for just a moment. We have about 1 week left in the year.
And we have a telephone call.
We're going to have to get back to this because it's an important, and that was a perfect segue. So, caller, you're on the air with the personal wealth coach. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Guys, enjoy the show. Hey, there was an article in the Wall Street today about a new fear index to compete, I guess, with the VIX. Historically, has there been any other major gauges that were, and the reason they cited for that was the VIX could be manipulated. So has there historically been any other gauges that were famously used and
yes,
and then change because of manipulation? I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Well, I don't know if it was changed because of manipulation, but there's a survey that goes on among the American Association of Individual Investors, as well as surveys that have come along since then. That survey professional investors, and the more bullish they are, the less fear they have, the more we should be afraid.
Yes.
And
so
the more confident they are, the more convinced that we've got a bull market, the more likely it is we're about to have a bear market, and vice versa. The VIX has a great deal of questionability. I mean, the fact that there's a lot of variance in futures prices on the S&P 500, which is what the VIX is all about, doesn't mean much of anything. And we found that out this year. And that's a general truth. Basically, if we assess the VIX as being a fear gauge,
it's not.
It doesn't work very well because it's a greed gauge.
I don't think it's either of those.
It's the amount of people who are making bets that vary greatly on what the S&P 500 is going to be in the near future.
It's just a volatility index. It's just saying how much things are up and down.
But it actually doesn't say how much things are up and down. It actually says how much people think things will be up and down, I think. It's a futures gauge, I think. And as a result, it's the more people are betting on more up and down, the more up and down, the higher the VIX gets. I don't know.
It's the expectation of volatility.
Right. So
now what we have to figure out first, let's take a step back, because this is one of those things that people talk about but don't spend a lot of time to actually telling you the definition. What is volatility? well, let's see, nitroglycerin is volatile. It bounces and it blows up. The Bitcoin is volatile. Things that go up and down very rapidly are volatile. If you have an expectation for volatility, that's different than an expectation for return, because volatility by definition includes the up part of the bounce. It's not measuring just the downside. So when people talk about it as a fear indicator, they may be, and you just said, well, it's the flip side, it's the greed indicator. What's just happened, and this has happened in the past, what, 3 months or so, would you say? We've switched from fear to greed?
Yes.
So the bear market and the bull market have these great, great relationships with each other. The relationships are bear market generally begins when everybody's optimistic. Bull markets begin when everybody's pessimistic. And I know that sounds the opposite of what they are, because a bear market has to start in a really high market for it to drop. And a bull market has to start in a really low market for it to go up. Bull markets start on pessimism, mature on optimism, and die on euphoria. Well, the volatility expectation right now, up to this point, very near this point from the Great Recession, people have been looking at the VIX as being an indicator of people's fear, because we were coming out of a recession. This has been a scary thing. Mm-hmm. Well, what you just said makes perfect sense there. Now it's kind of flipped to being a greed indicator, not a fear indicator, because people have gotten far. I mean, it's been 10 years since the beginning of the recession. People have gotten far enough away from it, they don't remember it very well. I mean, they still remember it. It's still there. It still hangs behind us. But now it's an amorphous cloud instead of the thing that really hurt us.
And it really didn't hurt us anyway.
Some of us maybe.
So we have another caller on 773-1400. You are on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead. Boy, he just
didn't want to talk to us.
Didn't want to talk to us.
All right, let me jump back to where we were before the call, because there are some other indexes that have been used for fear, but consumer confidence is one that's been used the longest, and it's one that you can track for the longest period of time, and it's one that is not very easily manipulatable. It is by definition manipulated by our own outlook in the world as a society, but that's as manipulatable as any opinion. It's just on a grand scale. But we were talking about something else before this. We were talking about what would have happened if the tax bill hadn't been passed and how the market moved. And I wanted to bring this in because it's a perfect segue, even though we've had this jump between the two. Back in September, we talked about something kind of at length, and that is that this year ends in the number 7. And every year that ended in the number 7 for the past century has had some major market collapse.
Catastrophe.
And I said that makes as much sense as determining who wins the Super Bowl, determining how high the market's going to go. They are unrelated. They've just for 9 years in a row or 9 decades in a row happened to be in a year, which you have a lot of opportunity in a year to have a crash. Not all major crashes happen in number 7 years. There's lots of other crashes that have taken place. Mm-hmm. And I'm willing to bet we've got less than a week left of business days. We've got how many business days do we have left? We're going to miss Monday because the market's closed. Observing Christmas, even though it's really hard to observe
the past. We have around 4 days left.
So, well, I think we've got 3 days, maybe 2 days if we're taking 29. No, we've got 3 days left in the market.
What, is everybody taking Friday off?
27th, 28th, and the 29th. And then next week begins on the 1st. So that's the rest. I think everybody's taking the 26th off for the market. I don't know. Not positive about that. So we may have 4 days.
Technically 4 days.
We might have 3 days. I don't think we're going to have a major collapse in the stock market in the next week.
And there's a really good reason, because there really won't be enough people at work.
Right.
To
Everybody's
sell the
taking
stocks,
time
right.
off. The economy's doing well. And what we try to do as humans, unless there are aliens listening, or dogs, cats, I suppose they're allowed to listen too. But as humans, we try to make patterns so that we can understand the world around us. It's one of our greatest strengths.
3 minute stations.
And one of our greatest weaknesses. Our greatest strength is in finding the pattern so that if we see the beginnings of the pattern again, we can avoid it. But sometimes we find patterns that aren't real.
Well, I've noticed that
ending in the number 7 is one that isn't real.
When the days get shorter, it will precede the days starting to get shorter and hitting the point where they're equal day and night.
Uh-huh.
As they coast into longer nights and shorter days, the pattern is it gets cold.
Yes. And that's one of the reasons why we started looking at the skies to pattern what's going on in our seasons.
And that was so scary that we decided to put a lot of lights up so we couldn't see the stars anymore.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah,
we got
exactly.
It.
So where we are is, it's kind of fascinating. We're still looking for patterns. And the ones that get publicized aren't necessarily always real. But if we can look back and say, well, this is great. I mean, the roulette tables in Vegas and everywhere else for that matter, they have a display next to the roulette table that shows the numbers that have landed the last 10 or 15, sometimes 20 times. And then beneath that, it sometimes will say the numbers that it's landed on the most in the last month. So people look at those and they go, oh, I better choose one of those numbers. Or I better not choose one of those numbers because it won't land on those if it's just landed on those. That's not how randomness works. It's just as likely, just like when you're flipping a coin, if you have flipped a coin 9 times in a row, unless I'm the one flipping the coin and then it gets all wonky because I know how to flip a coin to get it to land the right way. If you flip a coin 9 times in a row and it's tails every one of those times, what's the likelihood of the next flip being tails?
Exactly 50%.
Exactly. It isn't just because it's happened 9 times in a row doesn't mean that it's less or more likely to happen again. And that's the definition of what's been going on with the number 7 at the end of the decade. It's just been coincidence. And we've got a caller on 773-1400. Caller, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Well,
that caller said, ah!
Said well, actually.
Said well?
Said well. And then
I didn't hear the well. I just heard the.
I think I heard well. Somebody said well.
Was that you?
No, I think I didn't think it was me.
That was
anyway,
well spoken.
There were some interesting things. A few interesting things. You know, it's kind of funny. Some weeks we prepare for the show. At least I prepare my preparation for the show, and I can get maybe 5 stories.
I've got so many stories now.
I don't know. I don't know that it would be very difficult to count the number of news stories that I have on my computer right in front of me right now.
I have probably 5 stories just on Saudi Arabia and oil.
See, I don't even have it. Well, I've only got one on Saudi Arabia that they're actually buying up oil properties in the United States.
That's
rather than
that was one of the stories.
Rather than
yeah.
Historically, Aramco is the American Arabian Oil Company or Arab American. I don't remember which. Yeah, it was the Arab American Oil Company. Because we were buying up oil properties in Saudi Arabia because it's where the oil was. Now the Saudis are taking their excess money and thinking, oh boy, we're running out of oil. Or we're going to run out of oil.
Or not even run out of oil, but we can't get it out cheap enough to take the profits mm-hmm. that we want off of it to pay our citizens
so they're now
and compete with you
right,
guys.
They're now investing in the United States in oil properties, which means, by the way, that we will instantly see the scams of the Saudi billionaires who want to shuffle their money to the United States so they can buy oil properties, and all you have to do is send them your bank account number, your routing number.
Yeah, those are coming.
All of your passwords, and they will send you $10 million.
That's a scam. Expect it. It should be coming anytime.
It's probably already here.
So let me hit, just since we already mentioned that to some extent, they're buying property here. Here is the rationale, because these news pieces come out in order. And U.S. crude oil production is scheduled next month to pass Saudi Arabia.
That's pretty crude.
And by the time we hit March, will be the number one crude oil producing country in the world. Mm-hmm. Russia is doing a little bit more than Saudi Arabia. So March or so, we're going to pass all other single countries as far as crude oil productions. What that doesn't talk about is natural gas.
So when the shortest day of the year actually arrives in March.
Wait, no. That's the equinox. That's the day that is equal to the night.
I've been very carefully keeping up with this. There's one day in March when there's only 23 hours in the day.
Oh, that's only in United States where we have daylight savings.
But the longest day of the year is in November.
Which, yeah.
Because there's like 25 hours.
But those are arbitrary and has nothing to do with the length of darkness or light. It just has to do with the length that Congress decreed.
Well, it all depends on your definition of light.
Okay, so back to crude oil and natural gas.
Sorry, I just had to throw that stupidity in there.
It is stupid. Yes, thank you very much. We need as much stupid as possible
this
time
of
year.
Yes, we do. We need some dumb and dumber going on.
Yes. So crude oil, natural gas, we're already the number one producer on the planet when you throw in natural gas.
Be careful about throwing in natural.
That's very volatile. If we're talking about a volatility index, natural gas, don't be...
It's extremely volatile.
Yes, it's very volatile.
So is propane.
So this concept of us taking over largest production, we've talked about this probably ad nauseum to a degree that most people don't really care. But those of you that do care are going, wow. Because the price of oil has been going up for the past, 4 months or so? Not drastically, but slowly. And part of that has been the number of bankruptcies in the fracking industry and the lack of profit there. They're finding better ways of being profitable, particularly as the price comes up. And this is a hard fact, but it's something that happens every time an industry starts to mature, is the dead wood gets cleared out. The people that are not running efficient businesses go broke, whether it's internet companies, technology companies, refining companies, it doesn't matter. When there's a new industry, anybody can do it. As it matures and the competition gets tough, the ones that are inefficient, that are over-leveraged, that are barely making it paycheck to paycheck, they fail. And then their properties get purchased at cut-rate prices in bankruptcy by their competitors.
Another reason the price has been going up a little bit, and the amazing thing is the prices didn't spike.
Yeah, it's winter.
Not just that. There was an extended period of time there when much of the oil that normally comes out of the North Sea wasn't going anywhere because there was a leak in a pipeline. And as a matter of fact, I think it's still going on. And then there was another pipeline failure in Turkey. And I mean, you don't think about those as being big deals, but they are, because it cuts off a tremendous amount of supply that comes out of Russia when the Turkey pipeline went down. And it cut off the North Sea Brent standard oil fields, the big oil fields in the North Sea, from supplying oil to Europe. Now, historically, when we've seen something like that happen around the world,
you usually see a spike in the oil prices.
You see a sudden jump, and you may remember when a couple of little things like that happened and gasoline jumped from about $2.50 to about $4. And it didn't happen this time. And again, the reason it didn't happen this time is part of what Jake is talking about, because the United States has a very, very, very rich, in-depth infrastructure with multiple ways of moving oil around.
Redundancies everywhere.
We we're producing oil in so many places. We talked about earlier when the hurricanes were churning around, when we had those three relatively large hurricanes that churned through the Gulf. Historically, that would have caused a big spike in the price of oil and a big spike in the price of gasoline, and it didn't do either one. And again, the reason is, very, very fundamentally, something very, very, very basic, something that you have to throw all your old assumptions out the window, has changed in the world economy. And that is, the United States used to be the biggest net importer of petroleum and oil on the planet by a long shot. Now we have reversed roles and are working. We're the biggest in if you throw in biggest that, exporter. As you said, if you throw in natural gas.
We're still a net importer, but only if you consider that we're importing to refine and then exporting.
But we are on the way to being the dominant force in petroleum exporting in the United States. And
in the world. Yeah.
In the world. And there's a little tidbit that went by that you probably missed in all of the noise about tax reform and so on. And that is that large sections of China, and particularly Beijing, the heat was turned off in the buildings.
Yeah.
Now, and it, you know, they're not way south someplace. They're,
it's kind of cold there.
It's cold there. And they turned the heating off in the building. And the reason they turned the heating off in the buildings is China has recognized officially and unofficially in every other way that burning a lot of dirty coal is a really, 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 really bad idea. It hurts their, it's hurting their economy, not to mention their health and the world air pollution and global warming and a host of other things. So they said, okay, we're going to switch to natural gas and petroleum main with the mainstream on natural gas. So they directed from a central location that lots of natural gas would now be funneled to run power plants around the country, and they converted the power plants.
But they didn't put the infrastructure in place to get all the natural gas that they needed in time.
That, and they just can't get it out of the ground quick enough. And they, so they're now scrambling because they built the plants. They have got to find natural gas. And fortunately for us, we recently have in the United States have invested a great deal of money in natural gas, liquefied natural gas exporting ports on the West Coast. And so we are in a position.
The only problem with that is the red tape. We're only allowed to export to countries that we have free trade agreements with.
Really?
With the liquid natural gas. Okay. That is correct. We have not loosened that yet. We have new facilities, and they were getting in place for the big new free trade agreements that we had going with Europe and with the Pacific, didn't go through. So now we have these ready to go, and what might wind up happening is we may wind up having to export to Canada, who will be part of the Pacific Free Trade Agreement.
Right.
Who will then be our middleman.
But they can't go to China because China's not part of – well, wait a minute. Canada can go to China because China was never in the Free Trade
Correct.
Agreement.
Correct. So Canada can sell to another country in the Free Trade Agreement, whether that's Taiwan. And Taiwan has a huge amount of trade with China. So we've got two middlemen rather than us being part of it. That's kind of when we talk about free trade being good for everyone. When you don't have free trade and other people do, it's not good for you. It's really not good for you.
Yeah. For whatever it's worth, in case you haven't figured it out, we think our getting out of the Pacific Trade Agreement was a terrible idea because
the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
The partnership is moving forward. The only
just without us.
It's moving forward without us. And the point is it needs a big anchor economy. And the Chinese, who originally were excluded from it in our version, where we would be the anchor economy for the whole Pacific Ocean.
They are negotiating to get into it.
China says since the United States doesn't want in, we would be very happy to establish free trade with everybody around the Pacific Rim except the United States.
The reason why the Chinese were not included in this agreement is because of their lack of intellectual property rights, their lack of paying people for the idea, the invention, the methodology. They don't have that covered. So we said most free trade agreements are saying things like, well, if we have an invention or a thing that we've produced, you can't just copy it and sell it at a great profit. Well, China's not ready to do that yet. So us stepping out of it not only removed freedom of trade from the United States, it also removed property protection rights with many of the countries that we were about to have free trade agreements with. And that if they turn around and start having a free trade agreement with China, and China is able to sell to them things that we invented, only they get to do it without the research and the budget that goes into the failures. They just get the final product, copy it, and sell it to their buddies for free. We've lost all power in that transaction. by not being part of the agreement. That's a problem. There's a lot of problems like that. And it's very easy to say, well, they're taking American jobs by going overseas to get these things. And I hate to say this, it's the truth, but I hate to say it anyway. The jobs that went overseas making little transistors and shoes and all the other things are not going to ever come back to Americans. We've moved beyond them. We cannot afford to make them at the low price, at the wages that we pay Americans. Those manufacturing things may come back here, but only if robots are doing them. So this knee-jerk reaction of, no, we can't trade with the rest of the world because then we have to compete with them, it's something we felt in our guts for our entire history, but as Americans, we've said we can outcompete anyone, and now we're afraid to compete, and that's scary.
Did we run both sets of commercials?
We've got one more set to run. Let's do that right now. We will do it, and we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. If you would like to join in our conversation, the phone number to call in here is 254-773-1400, and we'll be back on the other side.
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And telephone number in here remains 254-773-1400 if you'd like to join with us and discuss or ask or comment about anything that has to do with the economy or investing. Please do not include anything about professional or team sports because the depth of our ignorance is unplumbable.
Yes, you cannot plummet.
Oh, another interesting thing that happened this week. On Friday, well, a lot of things happened on Friday. did a lot of things happen on Friday. The president signed the tax bill, of course,
yeah,
after saying he wasn't going to sign the tax bill until after the new year because it is going to wreak havoc if he signs it before the beginning of the year with corporate estimates for next year because they have to, by law, include the effects of a tax bill that they don't know what is. So he was going to sign it after Christmas, and then there was apparently a news broadcast somewhere that he was watching. This is not made up, folks. This is from the White House. There was a news broadcast somewhere that he was watching that said he was not going to keep his promise and sign it before Christmas, and he immediately dropped everything, rescheduled his day. He was going to be leaving for vacation at 10 o'clock, and he moved it to 11 o'clock. And did everything around and said, we are going to sign the tax bill today before Christmas. So he did. I don't know what to say about that, except that it's interesting and it happened. The other thing that happened, about the same time as he was signing the tax bill, is Bitcoin dropped 25% in one day. Now it's down about 40% or thereabout. No, about 30-some percent.
30%. It's had a little recovery today. Yeah.
But
and there's a reason for that.
You know, and
one of the major voices of Bitcoin became a board member of a corporation and had to sell a lot of Bitcoin to remove his conflict of interest. And he had to announce, he didn't have to announce, there's nothing like insider trading laws that make it so that you must announce, but he announced anyway to let people know what was going on. And he announced that he was selling his Bitcoins. Well, that removed a lot of confidence from the market, and a lot of people sold their Bitcoins too, which probably wasn't all that great for his profit-taking. He made a lot of money doing it by waiting so long. But I don't see this as the bursting of the bubble, by the way. I think more people will need to jump into it and not have any clue what they're doing before the bubble truly bursts. I think this happened back... almost identical to this happened just a few months ago, and before that, a few months before. It'll take enough people that don't know what's going on losing their money in there for everybody to bail out.
Well, I think
it's still a bubble.
We're in the vicinity though. There's a company called Long Island Iced Tea, and it's you can probably guess what it does.
It makes iced tea. for New Yorkers.
Right. And it was trading. Right. It's publicly traded. Well, actually, it really was a company on Long Island that made iced tea.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess I did guess what it was.
And it was trading at $2.08 a share on December 19th.
What did it change its symbol to?
Or it didn't change its symbol. It went to 244 on the 20th, which was within the range. And the next day, on the 21st of December, it changed itself to Long Blockchain.
Long Blockchain. It changed its name to with a blockchain included. And what did its stock price do?
Price went to $7. The stock price tripled because it's put the word blockchain, even though it's still making iced tea.
Well, it's important to know that changing your name can add so much value.
That is, in my opinion, strongly indicative that we have a full-blown mania bubble.
It is a bubble by any definition. Back in the late 90s, all you had to do was take your company and add the word .com to the end of it, and you would triple the value of the company for the 4 months before the collapse.
So what they're doing is they're making iced tea out of blockchains now.
Right. It's crypto tea. You can taste it, but only if you have the right key.
So the point is that there is probably no good end to Bitcoin. Blockchain as a technology has some potential.
Has a lot of potential.
But it
has nothing to do with the value of a Bitcoin, right, or Ethereum or Bitcoin Cash, and that's
and cool. the Bitcoin Cash did a nosedive. One of the
And just to throw this in, because most people don't know the difference between any, they don't know what one of them is. Bitcoin Cash was a spinoff because they thought that Bitcoin was too volatile to ever be used as a real currency. You can't buy something with something whose value changes 30% in a given day. I mean, if you buy a latte at Starbucks and then Starbucks goes to cash the check and they got 30% less than what they charged, they're not going to want to take Bitcoins anymore. And that's been the case. A lot of companies that were taking Bitcoin stopped taking Bitcoins. Well, the people that were involved in the Bitcoin movement said, hey, that's not cool. All this volatility means that we can't use this stuff as money. And that's the whole concept. So we're going to spin off and make Bitcoin Cash, which, by the way, just doubled the supply of cryptocurrencies.
Right.
Which, if anybody talks about supply and demand, should have cut the value in half. It didn't, because it's a mania. It's not about value or supply or demand. It's about the mania. Hey, this is a new thing. Everybody needs to blah, 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 blah. And so Bitcoin Cash, which is designed with an algorithm to be less volatile, was just as volatile as Bitcoin. And it goes to say that unless there is something structural in a currency to maintain stability, it's going to have volatility. There's a lot of Y words, but the end result is, unless there is an entity focused on preserving, maintaining stability of value, it's not going to have stability of value. It's going to bounce around.
And the other thing is that there are other coins besides Bitcoin. Other coins, like other.
They're not really coins. There's not something you can hold.
There's other initial coin offerings, they're called, that have been coming out. One of which came out a couple of weeks ago. It has attracted $700 million. And in its statement, in its initial coin offering statement, which is a weirdness in and of itself, it says it has no value and really won't exist.
Okay.
And people have invested $700 million. Oh, no. What it says is has no practical purpose.
Right. 3 weeks ago, just to hold that steady, because that was totally illegal. Totally legal. It's no right. Laws were broken in that. About 3 weeks ago, the SEC and the FBI arrested a man in Florida.
Just one?
Just one. Just okay. One man. This particular case, just one man was arrested for an initial coin offering where he raised around $7 million, but he didn't even have the algorithm. He didn't have anything. There was no...
He just said, this is an initial coin offer.
Right. So not only did he take the idea of there's no algorithm here, which everybody admits that algorithm can be used for free outside of this system, or you can choose to pay money for this algorithm by using this system, that can raise $700 million. But if you don't have the algorithm, which is in essence free, you haven't even done the work to do that, well, that's a scam. So he's going to prison for releasing a Bitcoin or like thing, a cryptocurrency, that had no cryptography behind it. So he was just sending out emails saying, yes, you bought
it's
one.
It's an unencrypted currency.
Right. So we have a caller on 773-1400. Caller, you're on the air with a personal wealth coach. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I just have a question here. It's just basically a curiosity question. You know, back in the day, they used to have like $1,000 notes, $10,000 notes, and they don't have that anymore. And I just wondered why they discontinued them. And another question in my conversation with you is, what was a $2 bill invented for? You have a good day and Merry Christmas to you, sir.
Thanks. Merry Christmas to you, too.
Two different questions, two different answers.
But they're both curiosity questions.
The big notes that the United States used to issue.
Big bills, big notes.
Fit
in your pocket.
Were taken out of circulation because they actually encourage, or they certainly support, money laundering and drug dealing off the books. And the idea is it takes a lot of $100 bills to make $1 billion or even a few $1 million. And it big and bulky, and it's hard to haul around. And it's
easier
for the
easiest.
DEA to catch you at.
Let's do the easiest answer: taxes.
Right. Well,
the easiest.
Yeah.
I mean, there's organized crime. There's terrorism. We can look at that. But organized crime was not the reason why they removed 10,000. Terrorism wasn't even on the radar yet. They were looking at it as the government gets no revenue for a purchase that you do in cash. Without informing them.
Mm-hmm. And that ties right into Bitcoin. And one of an article that I read in Barron's, which made eminent sense to me, said Bitcoin is a tiny little flea on the back of the economic dog right now, and no one's at the federal levels of any nation is paying a lot of attention to it, except maybe the Chinese. But here's what it does. It enables people to make purchases and sales without a record of that purchase and sale, and thereby to avoid paying income taxes to the government in which they are paying any form of taxes to the government in which they made the purchase or the sale. It also greatly facilitates terrorism and violent activity. To give you an example, there have been a couple of big hacks recently that resulted in one coin exchange going kaput. And in the process, a lot of people losing a tremendous amount of supposed money as their Bitcoins disappeared. Turns out that we now have official word that North Korea was the power behind the hack. And so then the Bitcoins are now in the possession of North Korea, which enables them to bypass all of the restrictions on moving money around because Bitcoin can be moved around freely without any government getting involved.
They can buy parts for nuclear weapons.
Right.
They can buy whatever they want with those Bitcoins because it is worth a lot right now.
And that's just one of the hard core realities of Bitcoin. And blockchain, as we said, has a tremendous potential. But I think at some point, if Bitcoin gets big enough, governments are going to crack down on it and make it illegal to do trades in Bitcoin.
Here's what I expect to see. If rogue nations really get into cryptocurrencies, really get into Bitcoins, really get into that sort of thing.
One of them obviously is.
Right. One of them is, but maybe not on as grand a scale as some of the others. So if it's getting into the cryptocurrency and that's the way it's getting a lot of its stuff done. Some other major nation who is at odds with that country will create havoc in that market, whether it's the CIA or the Russian equivalent or the French or the British. When you have a market whose purpose allows a rogue nation to become a threat to other large nations, just know that those other large nations are not going to allow it to peacefully happen. They're going to get involved, and they're a lot better at this sort of thing than the North Koreans are.
And one of the reasons the Bitcoin has risen so astronomically in value is because Chinese purchasers are still busy purchasing Bitcoins with the intent of transferring money outside the country, and China doesn't like that.
Yeah, and every time they shut down a major exchange over there, you see the price of Bitcoin drop drastically by double digits in a given day. So keeping that in mind, we're about out of time this hour. We'll be back next hour. We've got more to talk about, lots more to talk about. It's a great year, but let me hit that last question about the $2. When, why was it set up? Well, it was set up in 1862 because people needed to spend $2 on a lot of things back then, I guess. But it's still in circulation. There's all these urban legends that the $2 bill is not real. It is. It's still legal tender.
Well, it also was intended to save the government money, just like the there was a coin, $1 coin, because we wear out dollar bills rather quickly, and the
right.
government has to reprint them, which is expensive, and it costs the government more than a dollar to print a dollar bill, it
right.
boils down to.
So they basically are saying this would cost less, but people don't use it very much. People are using cash less and less. So if you would like to talk to us off the air. We actually do give investment advice as fiduciaries to individuals, to foundations, trusts, and corporations. The local number to call, it's got voicemail waiting, is
254-947-1111.
You can reach that number toll free, 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. You can email us directly, Jeff or Jake at tpwc.com. Until next week, this has been, or until next hour, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.